This is Remnant Bride Radio, bringing to you Time with Gary, a common man with an uncommon understanding. Now, from RemnantBrideRadio.com, here's Gary Naylor.
Hi, this is Gary Naylor. Let's spend some time together. On April 25, 2009, we gathered in my home here in Salem, Missouri, for the purpose of holding Passover together. Well, now, this wasn't just any Passover. We weren't just getting together and have unleavened bread and some wine and some lamb. We got together with a very specific purpose, and that was the hope of the beginning of the Elijah ministry. One of the things that we've learned of late is that the Elijah ministry must begin at Passover. Yeshua's ministry began at Atonement. It lasted for 3.5 years and it ended at Passover. Now, the covenant with the many, which is in Daniel chapter 9, reveals to us that Yeshua's ministry is the last 3.5 years of a 7-year covenant. Now, this is called Daniel's 70 weeks if you're a Christian. But it's actually a covenant that Yahweh has made with the many. Yeshua walked out 3.5 years from Atonement to Passover. And that leaves another 3.5 years, the preceding 3.5 years of that covenant, that would go to the Elijah. In contrast, the Elijah ministry began at Passover, just as John began his ministry at Passover, and it would go to trumpets, where the Elijah would ascend alive, as Paul wrote in Thessalonians. So we gathered with the hope that that ministry period would begin at Passover, and that would be on April 25, 2009. That's in the new millennial calendar, and we're going to talk about that. And one of the people that was at the gathering is our co-host, Chris Meyer. Chris, what'd you think of the gathering?
Hi, Gary. Well, I was there, and I got to spend some wonderful time with some great folks, and including, you know, revisiting with you in person. And boy, what a wonderful, blessed time it was. I'm so glad that I took the time out of my schedule to be there. When I was there, I couldn't think of anywhere else that I would want to be. And so it was a great time, and I look forward to talking about it.
I especially enjoyed it. Saturday evening on the 25th, we had one of the best conversations that I've had since 1990, in which talked about the family and about government, about patriarchy, and about this nation. We talked about slavery. We talked about quite a number of issues, and it was very valuable. In fact, I trust that Yahweh is going to give me an opportunity to write on that subject soon, but it seems that right now my time is devoted to addressing the things that are written in the most recent blog posting titled Passover 2009 Report, and that on the blog is on May 3. It's a May 3 posting. And right now, even as we are producing this program, a follow-up is actually being written. I didn't think that this would be the case, but more information is coming out, and it's very useful. It's very hopeful. But at this point, let's stick with what is before us, and let's consider again this Passover on April 25.
Well, let's do that. And of course, in this report, you know, the first few paragraphs, if we can talk about this initially, after Passover, you know, we all went home, and I met some good brothers and sisters, you know, from California to the East Coast, and now you once again were faced with going to drive a truck. And so can you talk to us a little bit about that situation and the fact that that has changed for you, and how it changed and why it changed?
Chris, you've come to know me somewhat well. We have shared time together with each other face-to-face on 3 different occasions, and I do look forward to future times together as well. I think one thing that you would admit about me is that I'm a very practical, common person. I do not have aspirations to be something or to build something that's of this world. Would you concur with that?
Well, I would, and I've said this many times in these radio broadcasts and to you in our conversations, that if you were trying to take the kingdom by force, if you were trying to build something on your own, I think myself and several of us would be gone. It's just not something that makes sense for, I mean, Christianity's been trying to do that for 2,000 years, and so if there's one thing that's been consistent about you is that fact that you refuse to do this in the flesh and that you refuse to take the kingdom by force and that it's going to be by God or not at all, and you're just not going to force this, and we really appreciate that about you. And it's important that we see that in you, because it gives us the strength to continue to walk this out with you.
I would rather be this way than to be like a pastor and big, give hype and pep rallies to encourage people along. I would rather be reticent and accomplish what Yahweh has before us than to try to drive this forward with hype. I think of a scripture that means a lot to me in my life. Yeshua shared the story about, it was a parable, of course, about a man who went to his two sons. And he asked the one son, he said, would you go to the field and labor with me? And he said, yes, I will. But he didn't go. He went to another son and said, would you go to the field and labor? And he said, no, I won't. But he did. Yeshua then asked the Pharisees, who did the will of the Father? Well, I tend to be more reticent than to try to be confident and boastful about the future. I find it much better, and if Yahweh's going to accomplish this, he will accomplish it. I was reading an article recently, and we will talk about the truck driving in just a minute. I was reading an article about a gentleman, his name was Bob Diamond, Brooklyn, New York, and he talks about a tunnel. It was the first subway tunnel ever built, and it's called the Atlantic Avenue Tunnel. When he was a young man, he had heard about this tunnel, and he went to different people in engineering and such. He's an engineer himself. He was wanting to find this tunnel somewhere under the streets of Brooklyn. And he was told by others, well, we've looked, we can't find it. And Bob didn't give up. And he made a statement. He did find it eventually. It was through a manhole that it went down underground, four stories underground, and they found this, the first subway ever built. And he made a unique comment about it. He said that he felt like he didn't find the tunnel, but that the tunnel found him. I feel very much that way about the Elijah work. It's not that I'm trying to be Elijah. If I'm Elijah, Elijah will be me. And whenever I come to a place in which I'm disappointed, and that has been frequent, as a matter of fact, it's been frequent since 1994. One gentleman calls me the king of disappointment. I'd love to turn in that crown at some point. But I do not want to be in the place in which I am trying to accomplish it. If it's real, it will happen. Therefore, when I experience disappointments, my attitude many times is, if it's not going to happen, I'll just go drive a truck. And frankly, just being real honest here, it would be a lot easier, it seems, in my life for me to go drive a truck than me to continue to walk this out. Chris, as you know, I've lost my family. I'm 60 years of age. I do not have security. And for me, the thought of going to drive a truck is like, just walk away, let the world go to hell, and when Yahweh wants to do something, I'm available.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute, because the folks that I met at Passover, Jim from Colorado, Joey from Pittsburgh, Tommy from Alabama, Stanley from Virginia, Kathy from Missouri, Bruce from California, these folks I think, Gary, they see that this is an office that keeps finding you. They see, and I see, that this is not you looking for a position. There's a big difference. And I will tell the audience that I just recently saw this, and it was an important distinction for me to see at this time in my walk, that this office keeps finding you, and it answers a lot of questions about your life and about all the intercessions and things that you've been through. That this office continues to find you, that you're not seeking a position or an office.
I would agree.
And I think the brothers and sisters in the bride, the ones that have met before in previous gatherings and the ones just recently, I really believe that they see what I see, that this is an office that you're called to, that keeps finding you, and doors keep opening for you. And if they saw it as something that, an office that you were seeking, I don't think there would be as much support and as much encouragement, as much faithfulness as there is. And so I think it's a very important distinction that we make, that this is an office that is finding you and it's not you finding it.
And that is exactly the way I want it to be. If it's of Yahweh, it will stand. If it's not, I don't want to have anything to do with it. I am a realist. Chris, I think one of the worst things a person can do is deceive themselves. You know, it's one thing for people to lie to you and you be deceived. It's another to lie to yourself. I don't want to be in that position. If it's not God, I'm not interested. And I've been willing to lay it down. And that's why whenever we had our Passover gathering, after 349s, in which after each disappointment I was ready to go drive a truck, once again, I began to make plans to go drive a truck. So that was on April 25, that was Saturday, and we were together Saturday and Sunday. And Monday I began to consider what I was going to do. Tuesday I made a phone call to the licensing department here in Salem, and come to find out they were going to have the test Wednesday for the permit to, you know, for truck driving school. So I began to study to take the test once again. And that was Tuesday. Tuesday night, after talking with you, you encouraged me to give it time, and you just couldn't see how me driving a truck was the best thing to do. But that night when I went to bed and I was sitting there, I resolved, I'm going to go drive a truck. I went to bed. Sometime right before 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up from a dream. Now, Chris, I have not had a spiritual dream in, I guess, maybe 10 years. I would count this as a spiritual dream. In it, and of course, before I tell the dream, I'll reaffirm that I do not have my wife or family. And my wife will not come home because of what I believe. And so we continue to be separated. In the dream, I was looking for my wife. I was in a town, and I went up this street. It was a resident, but there was an intersection that was strip malls. Someone said, what's a strip mall? It's one of those little malls that, you know, it's just a strip along the row of street that's just business after business after business. And I went down and turned left and went down that street, came back, went further up the street I was coming up in the first place, and then I turned around and came back basically to where I was. When I got to that area, I turned around and looked, and there was a woman immediately behind me. I realized, somehow, that she had been following me the entire time. She had been behind me all the way. And she was dressed in a long sleeve, all the way to the bottom of her dress, it was down to her ankles, long sleeve, long dress, and it was linen. Now, not white linen, like a bleached linen, but a natural linen. Her hair color, I think, was about the color of her dress. I cannot go into the details at this point, but she exhibited just that wife submissiveness and a yieldedness to me as a wife. And at that point, I woke up. Now, I have been separated from my wife for over 6 years. I drew a contrast at that point of the way a wife should be. She should be like this woman. This woman walked right behind me, so much so I didn't even know she was there, and she was totally yielded to me. A wonderful testimony of a wife. And it made me think about my wife, and I thought, oh, I wish she was that way towards me. Then I began to examine my own self. And here I am going to go drive a truck, and it was challenged. Well, Gary, if you were wanting your wife to trust you through the difficulties when she didn't understand, when she didn't even agree, I was wishing that she would trust me and walk with me. Well, how is it that now, without the Passover fulfillment that I was wanting, how is it that I'm going to go drive a truck and not trust in Yeshua? And I found myself coming up short, that I was doing the same thing. And if I ever wanted my wife to come back, which I do, of course, am I walking that life out in my relationship with Yeshua as a submissive, obedient wife, trusting in him? And as Peter said, that you trust in your husband and call him Lord and trust him without fear. And I had to come to the place where I said, I'm not going to go drive a truck. I'm going to trust you. I'm going to walk this out. You're my husband. I am your wife, your bride, and I'm going to trust you. I'm sure that makes sense to you.
Well, it does, and it did, and it was very encouraging. And it not only makes sense practically, but spiritually, it is a good example for all of us to take a look at. If we want certain things in our lives to line up, whether they be wives or anything for that matter, are we exhibiting the same faithfulness to our husband? I think it's a wonderful lesson for us to see. And I think through this we've seen that there have been some bride brothers and sisters that have been faithful to the bride as this bride was in your dream. That there are those that are walking faithful in this work.
Yes, a few.
Many,
you know, they're disappointing. They walk a ways and they can't walk any further. Admittedly, I am a hard person to walk with. It's not that I'm a difficult personality person, I don't think. It's just that I have a difficult walk, a very difficult walk. And it has experienced disappointments, and many people can't handle that. And so, but yes, there are brothers. In fact, one of the brothers wrote me and said, I want to be the wife to you like you are expressing. And I appreciate that very much, and I'll always respect that as well. One of the things that I have learned in my walk with Yahweh is that he waits for me to make a commitment. Once I make my commitment, then he moves and he blesses. That was the case several times as we've walked all this out since October 16th, which was Trumpets, October 16, 2008. He waits for me to make a commitment. When I make that commitment, that's when he moves. This was no different. When I made that commitment that I am going to trust you, I'm not going to go to truck driving school, that is when Yahweh began to open my eyes to understand some of these things about a delay period. A delay period, and concerning Yeshua, it was a delay period of 40 days. I knew that was a possibility even before Passover. But I didn't think it was valid enough to delay going to truck driving school. But Yahweh has shown a lot to me since then so that I can understand even more so why this was important that we do delay, and it gives us hope for June the 6th. It's what we find is Yeshua began, and really the person just needs to go in to the website, to the Remnant Bride blog, to read the May 3 posting Passover 2009 report. Basically, it shows that Yeshua's ministry began with his baptism and then 40 days in the wilderness. And the end of his ministry was his baptism of death, burial, and resurrection, and then 40 days on this earth. And then after I made the commitment not to go to truck driving school, I looked at a calendar and realized that if I counted from my wedding anniversary, which is June 6, her wedding was June 6, 1969, or 6-6-69, 666, I realized that 40 days back from June 6 of 2009 would take you to the day of his resurrection in this last feast period, which would have been April the 28th. And so people just need to go read the writing. There's no need of me teaching on it here. They need to go read the writing, and then they can read the writing that's going to come out here in the next few days, too, because it expounds upon it even more. So there is hope, and this is the way of Yahweh. He has always required me to respond and to obey, and then he blesses. So there is hope.
Well, there is, and I am here to attest that and confirm that when you walked out the first 49 and nothing happened, you made a commitment to continue on, and more revelation was shown. Now we're at the end of Passover, and now we're looking at some marvelous revelation about a flip, a 40 and 3 and a 3 and a 40 that we've never seen before. So this business of driving a truck, it's behind you. You're going to continue to walk this out. The office continues to find you. And we'll walk with you, and we'll see what Yahweh will do in these next days.
One of the things that has come up is the question, and I try to walk circumspectly, Chris, examining my motives, examining my purpose, examining my steps. One of the considerations was, well, how about a delayed Passover? But in an honest examination of that, and that's the wonderful thing about making honest examinations as you learn something, I realized, of course, that a delayed Passover really belongs to Christianity. I think the posting is April 16. It talks about the delayed Passover, and I'd encourage the people to read that posting at the blog as well. But the delayed Passover really belongs to Christianity. It's their resurrection. We get the first resurrection. They get the delayed Passover because they've been among the dead. You know, they've been dead for 2,000 years. And so their Passover their Passover fulfillment is still much before them, at least 1,000 years.
Now, wasn't that testified in the Gospel of Mark, where Yeshua cleansed the temple on the next day?
Yes, exactly. Can you
talk about that?
That's a good testimony. It's very revealing, and this is one of the things that encourages me and encourages others that bride truth is indeed truth, and that's these Bible contradictions. In Matthew, Yeshua came into Jerusalem on the donkey, actually on two donkeys, and he went to the temple, and he cleansed the temple of the money changers on the same day. This is the same case with Luke. He came into Jerusalem on a donkey, and he went and cleansed the temple on the same day. Well, of course, that's first and second remnant, and that's what we're expecting at this point. He has to cleanse us at this time, and there can be no delay. That's not the case in Mark. In the book of Mark, he comes in on the donkey, he goes to the temple, he looks inside it, and he leaves, and he goes to Bethany, spends the night at Bethany, comes back to Jerusalem, and cleanses the temple the next day. Obviously, it's a parable. It's either that or the scriptures are flawed and error, and we can't trust them. People say, well, it was just a man's recollection. Well, you can't have it both ways. It is either the word of God or it's the word of men. So it's either error or it's a parable. And the bride has seen that these kind of wonderful testimonies are indeed parables with wonderful truth in them. And we see the same thing. Just like there is the delayed Passover, there is the delayed cleansing of the temple. That's what has to happen. Of course, John is unique, and we talk about it quite a bit in this new writing on the Passover 2009 report and this next one that's coming out. In it, Yeshua went to, well, first, he did not cleanse the temple at all at the time of coming into Jerusalem before his crucifixion. What you find is that he was baptized by John. He went into the wilderness. Of course, I don't think that's in John, but what happens is whenever he comes back from the wilderness, he spends one day at the Jordan. He spends a second day at the Jordan. He leaves. He goes to Cana. On the third day, it specifically says it was on the third day, he goes to Cana. He turns the water into wine, which will be one of the subjects that we'll be talking about in the upcoming Dear Remnant Bride Inquirer in the blog. And he turns the water into wine, and then he goes to Jerusalem, and what does he do? He cleanses the temple of the money changers. It's his second work after turning the water into wine.
Right, so when is Christianity's cleansing?
Christianity's cleansing, it could either, you could look at it at the end of the millennium, because that's when their Elijah period began. It's a 2,000-year period. And, you know, one could say it's for 2,000 years. We'll just have to wait and see. But their Elijah period does not begin until the end of the millennial reign. They have a legal obligation to be in the grave for 3 days and three nights, or 3,000 years. Then they come out of the grave, those who are dead, and those who are alive will remain, and they will have an Elijah period for 2,000 years. They had a Moses period for 2,000 years, and then there's the millennial reign, then you have the Elijah period. So the hope that we have as the bride is the testimony of John, and that is the water is turned into wine, and then Yahweh starts cleansing the temple. He's preparing people for the millennial period, which Emmanuel, God with us, will be here on earth.
Right, so that's the testimony of the 40 and 3. What is the testimony of the 3 and 40?
The 40 and 3, of course, for the listener, the 40 and 3 would be him coming out of the waters of baptism from John, and then he goes into the wilderness for 40 days, and then, as we counted, there was 1, 2, 3 days, the third day, Cana. Now, that is at the beginning of his ministry, which should be the beginning of the Elijah work as well. It should be a 40 and 3, which is what we're going through right now. We're going through 40 days of waiting and then the 3 count to the turning the water into wine, which should be June 6th, the 40th anniversary, I might say. 40th anniversary of my wife and I, of our marriage. And I'm not going to lose my place. I know where I'm going from here, but I do want to say this. Let's draw a contrast in where we're going to go. We're going to go back, and we're going to talk about that testimony of the 3 and the 40. But at this point, let's stop. And let's draw a distinction between the two women in that dream, okay? One woman was my wife, and I couldn't find her. And I've been looking for her for over 6 years, really. She won't come home. She, in all honesty, she's a Vashti to me, in that she will not come when I call her. The contrast of a Vashti is an Esther. I believe that the woman in the dream who was faithfully behind me is likened to an Esther. The uniqueness of this lady, in addition to her submissiveness and her yieldingness to me, is that she was dressed in linen, and it was long-sleeved to her ankles. I do not know what her face looked like, but she, I believe, represented the bride of Yeshua. My job as Elijah is to establish that bride and to prepare her, if you would, kind of like a Mordecai, to prepare her for Yeshua. In a sense, she is a bride to me because I'm in that office, not in reality. But in my relationship, particularly with my earthly wife, the bride that I really desire is the bride of Yeshua. One who is called in Genesis the obedient people. That's who I long for. That's who I'm looking for. And that would be the testimony of the turning the water into wine at the wedding feast. Quite interestingly, and Jim pointed out, and I'll be writing about this, and I can mention it, but I haven't fully digested it. It's very interesting that when a man lays with his virgin wife, and unfortunately, that's a shameful negligence on the part of people today, which is a part of our society. When a man lays with his virgin wife, he, in fact, by, and this is not as common today because of our society, and I'm not talking about just promiscuity, but a woman who is a virgin would have a hymen, and it's a veil into the Holy of Holies. And what happens is when a man would lay with his wife, there would be the shedding of blood, which is the testimony of passing into the Holy of Holies and rending the veil, which is what happened when Yeshua died on the cross. There's a passage of a man proving that his daughter was a virgin by presenting the bed sheet as evidence that she was a virgin. She bled. Jim pointed out, and this is quite interesting, that when a man lays with a woman who's a virgin, he turns the water into wine. He turns the water into blood. Because water typically comes from a woman, but he turns the water into blood by rending the veil. Very interesting, very hopeful, I might say, for the promise at Cana of turning water into wine. It could be a testimony of the consummation of the marriage to the bride, which, of course, what that would mean would be the giving of the Sheman, the giving of the Holy Spirit. Now, that's quite exciting, isn't it?
It's amazing, Gary, the analogy between the natural and the comparison between the natural and the spiritual. It's you know, again, we've talked about how folks have said that the gospel is complex, and I've concurred that having eyes to see that it's really not all that complicated. And when you look at it at this level, just in our own bodies, and you've taught about this, how naturally our bodies speak of things prophetically, what a wonderful testimony that we have in front of us right now, that the water turned into wine may be the very consummation of the marriage, and with the hopeful production, the produce of the latter rain, the Sheman. What a wonderful thought.
And one of the additions to that, Chris, is we are looking at, numerically, it would be June 6th, if you count the Passover, and then you go 43 days, it would take you to June 6th. I find it quite wonderful that June 6th is my wedding anniversary. I sought to consummate my own marriage on June 6th. Actually consummated it on June 7th. And so it's quite wonderful to consider that spiritually that's exactly what can happen when, for me, 40 years ago, it's exactly what I experienced.
Mm-hmm.
That's hopeful.
Yes, and it goes back to this, you're not a man that's trying to make the office, and so you're not trying to take dates and make the number, crunch the number so that they add up to June 6th. Here the office is finding the man. Here's a man who was married on that date, and we're approaching that date as a 40-day, a 40 and a 3, and guess what? In the natural, you were married and consummated your marriage on that date. And so, again, it just lends more support that the office that you're calling is finding you and that you're just simply walking it out.
I'm in the natural. On June 6th of 1969, when we were married, at Mount Carmel Hospital, people were coming out of their stone statue sleep and coming alive, captured in a movie called Awakenings. And Awakenings was the first movie I ever saw and realized that movies prophesy. And here, at the exact same time that I am marrying my wife, people are coming out of sleep. And the cause of their problem was actually Parkinson's symptoms. And I was marrying my wife, and she became a nailer. What was her maiden name? Parkinson. My wife was a Parkinson and became a nailer on June 6th, and so she no longer had the symptoms of the people in Mount Carmel, the test of Carmel, that was going on at the same time we were having our wedding.
Amazing.
And then you, on April 3, of course, which would have been Tabernacles Pentecost, 2 days before that is the birthday of my daughter Grace. Her birth was on April 1, where Yahweh repaired the breach. Now, as we face June 6, it also happens that one of my other daughters, they're the two Second Remnant representatives, Catherine, her birthday is 2 days before the June 6 that we hope for, that Yahweh's going to do something. And frankly, these things are very encouraging. They lift me up. They give me hope. And yet when things don't happen, they just come falling down on me and crush me. But they're unmistakable.
Right. And I don't dismiss, Gary, that, and I think those that are close to you don't dismiss those things coming down on you and how they crush you. But I firmly believe that you see that it's an office that is building you, and that you, this is not something that you're seeking. And so you're able to stand these disappointments, and you'll commit, and if nothing happens, you'll commit and continue on, and Yahweh will continue to, again, you said it earlier, your job is to build the bride. Your job is to teach and build and edify the bride. Well, if you're driving a truck, you're not going to be doing that, or at least not as well as you have been.
Yes. Then I think, well, what if nothing happens and that, oh, I don't even like to think that way. Right now, we are looking with hope. And that is what keeps me going. You know, go back to 2003, Chris. What did I see was going to happen in my life? I was going to give up on the world. I was going to let it go to hell. I was going to go find a woman in Colorado, be with her, and I was going to end up, I knew I was going to end up as a homeless person on the streets of Dallas. I worked there for 3.5 years in a ministry to the poor. I fed the homeless for 3.5 years in the streets of Dallas. That's where I knew I was headed. Yahweh delivered me. He kept me from going that way. He actually sent another man to be in my place, a man who told me he would sit on the rock whenever I had claimed the rock. He said he would sit on the rock. A few years later, he ended up going to the streets as a street person. So that, in many other cases, Yahweh has kept me going. And like we've talked about, the office of Elijah is finding me, and not necessarily me finding the office. I'm grateful for what Yahweh's done.
Well, and I am too, and look back at all that's been written over the last few months and years. It's incredible how much truth has been revealed through you, and how these truths, you know, if we'll take them and embrace them, will build the bride. And I've said to you that I felt that at one point the bride was not quite ready yet, and I believe you concur that we just need to continue to walk this out and grow in Him and do the things that we know we need to do to be the obedient people. And I do believe that these things will come to pass. We'll see them in our lifetime. And when we do, it will be a wonderful thing.
I haven't forgotten about the 3 and 40, but the hope that we have right now is a very strong hope. And it's one that we can gain confidence in. And it is one that is desperately needed. And that's one of the reasons why to continue pursuing, is there is such a great need. I do hope that Yahweh is going to come on me with His Spirit and give me power. The timing of it, June 6th, to me, is very important. It's the day that it comes up. Did the Spirit come upon me on June 6th in 1994? No, but on what, June the 11th is when He told me that which He did at the beginning of the church, He would do again in the end. Then on June 18, He told me, I will not give my glory to the masculine body, but I'll give it to the bride. That's the first time I'd ever heard about this bride. That was on the 18th. Probably the 19th is when the Spirit came on me and was on me for a week and a half, and then there was this breach. as I explained in the May 3 posting, and the one that's going to come up as well, there was a breach, and I had a, boy, we're getting a long way from this 3 and the 40, but it's very interesting, and I realized this in a conversation with you and expressed it. It is extremely interesting that you had the sons of Israel who were led out of Egypt to enter into the promised land. That promise breached for 40 years, and then they entered into the promised land on the Passover. I feel the same thing concerning the bride work. In 1994, there was the promise of the bride. It breached. I had to go through the same thing. And so I've gone through 14 and even sometimes I would consider 15 years of a breach period in which things could not happen yet. And it was a time of walking in darkness as we've walked these things out. The hope now is that, of course, with this Passover that we had on April 25, that brings us into the promised land with this 43-day delay. And I do hope that June 6 is going to give us what we have to have. And I look forward to people reading this writing that's going to come out still before us about what we just talked about concerning the coming exodus out of Egypt. It goes back to the covenant that Yahweh established with Abraham in Genesis 15. And, of course, here I'm getting off on this. But you have 430 years from the time of the covenant with Abraham in Genesis 15 until the time that they came out of Egypt. That's 430 years. What's interesting, if you go back to that Genesis 15 on whenever Yahweh made the covenant with Abraham, and go nine periods of 430 years, you come to 19 and 94, when the Spirit came upon me. It's tremendously consistent with the testimony of the sons of Israel coming out of Egypt, that it would breach at that point and come up later, which would take us to June 6. So, there's hope, Chris, and you know, I see all these things, I marvel at them, I cannot ignore them, and we walk them out, and hopefully in these days ahead, somewhere between June 6 and I would say August 7, something needs to happen.
So, can you tell us about the other testimony about the 3 and 40?
Yes. Yes. But before I do, I do want to emphasize something between June 6 and August 7. And why August 7? That is when I entered into the bride. That's when the bride really began. I don't know where Yahweh regards the breach. I don't know if he'll go off June 6 or go all the way up to August 7. I have no idea. But that's the period of watching and waiting.
Right. And one thing that you mentioned in the writing is that when the Spirit came on you, it wasn't a feast. And that was a question to you because you know how Yahweh works off a feast, but he very well could again do something with you in this work, not on a feast.
It was always a puzzle to me, truly. I've thought many times, why did he give me his Spirit in June? There was not a feast. It made no sense. But if it was a foreshadowing and even a foretaste of what would happen in 2009, it makes complete sense. It would be very confirming and very fulfilling for it to come about in the same timing of that which began in 1994 for me. It was a wonderful time. So June makes sense to me now, especially when you put all of these delays together, and we had Passover April 25, and then you know, you add 43 days. So, are we ready to talk about the 3 and the 40?
Yes, one additional comment.
See, now, sure, you're dragging this out.
I'm sorry.
But no, that's well.
You know, of course, from the beginning of this, you've suggested that there still is some sort of a legal tie to something happening in June, July, or August, and that puts us at, what, 9 months from trumpets in October, which is a gestation period for birth. So, again, that leads to some hope.
Yes, indeed. And I must say, Mr. Meyer, and we'll talk about that. I must say, Mr. Meyer, the way we keep changing, you know, and keep adding more and more, we're actually very godly in doing this. This is just exactly the way Yahweh's led us in the last several months. We keep thinking it's time to talk about something, but he says, no, go, you know, more. So we're actually being very consistent in delaying talking about this 3 and 40. So we're very scriptural. So it's good. It's a good thing.
I'm glad because I was worried.
All right, let's look at those. October 16 was trumpets. That was 2008. And that's when I identified with Satan. A very important thing. And by the way, that's one of the elements of this writing on Passover 2009 report, the May 3 posting. I go through this thing, and I said, in a million years, in 10 million years, if someone had to figure this out in advance, they would never, never, never figure this out. This is something you have to walk at, and you look back, and you go, yes, yeah, well, that was it. Have you heard the story of Christopher Columbus? After discovering America, he came back, and all these ship captains were around the table with the king and all, and one of the cocky guys said, well, you know, of course, you know, anybody could have done that. And Christopher Columbus had took a boiled egg, and he said, handed it to him and said, can you make this egg stand on its end? And he took it, and then he tried to make it stand, and of course it kept falling over. And so he took the egg, and he tapped it on the table, and of course that what it did, it cracked the bottom of it, made it flat, and he set it on the table, and he said, yep, once you know, I'm sure he didn't say yep, he was probably the southern part of Portugal. He said, once you know how to do it, it's easy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when we look back at what we're getting ready to talk about, it still doesn't look easy, but we did it. Trumpets, October 16, 2008. And then, of course, Atonement would have been October 25. And Tabernacles was October the 30th through November 5. And then we, with Great Eighth Day, would have been November 6th, and we started counting from there for a Pentecost, which took us to December 26th. We thought after 49 days, we'd have Pentecost on December 26th. Nothing happened. I thought about trucks. I thought, no, I can't go drive a truck. I can't go drive a truck. You know, February, March was, well, I'll see. No, that one was, I had received that article about Pentecost being 249.
Right, in Leviticus, the Leviticus account.
Yes, and so we delayed it, and we thought, okay, we're going to go 249s. That must be it. And we got to went to February 13, and still nothing. And that's when I was ready to go drive a truck, and I thought, no, I can't do that. You know, March has always been a significant month to me. When I made that commitment, then Yahweh began to show us the 349s in the Scriptures. It's never stated clearly, but it is there. So that took us to April 3, Tabernacles, Pentecost, nothing happened. And then we realized, I was probably ready to go drive a truck then as well, then we realized, hold it, what are we considering here? Of course, the Elijah ministry cannot begin on Tabernacles. This is not horseshoes. Can't begin on a Tabernacles, Pentecost. It's got to be on a Passover. And of course, we saw the 21-day delay that took us to Passover. And joyfully we waited for Passover, and this is the first time we've actually gathered in all of the sequence of times. We actually gathered for Passover on April 25, and we received, you know, no power. That's when I was serious about driving a truck. And then Yahweh gave me that dream, first spiritual dream I've had in 10 years, and I realized I had to commit, and that's when he showed us the things that I've written about of late. And so it's been quite a journey. So what you said, yes, all of that is still tied together because every one of them has a legal link that takes us from October 16 all the way to my 40th wedding anniversary, June 6th of 2009.
So can we talk about the 3 and 40?
Are you ready?
I am.
It's not that big a deal.
Well, it is because it shows another flip.
Ah, okay. Yes, it does show another flip because the first one was a 40 and 3, which is the one we are hoping for that would lead us from our Passover of April 25 to June 6. That would be 43. And by the way, this new writing that's coming out addresses this issue of 43. Extremely interesting. We won't talk about it now. Then catch the next Dear Remnant Bride Inquirer or, you know, go to the blog. Extremely interesting.
Right, because you've got, you continue to see the number 43 come up. You've got four.
Mm-hmm.
You just talked about 9 by 430 years, and we've talked about 43,000 years in the Waltz of Life and the issue, the writing the issue. And so that number just keeps coming up at different dimensions, different levels.
And it's very promising. So, again, we have hope. We have hope. Okay, so we've talked about the 40 and the 3, which is 40 days after the baptism by John and then 3 days taking us to Cana, the wedding feast of Cana. Now, the 3 and the 40 is at the end of his life. The first 40 began by baptism by John. It took a brief moment to put him in the water and take him out. It says immediately he went into the wilderness, beginning the count to the 40. What we find at the end of his ministry is a 3 and 40. The 3 would be the 3 days in which he was, 3 days and 3 nights, that he was in the grave. There's the 3. The 40 is that we are told in Acts that he revealed himself to the people for 40 days, and then, of course, at the end of those 40 days, he ascended and went to heaven and stayed. And, of course, that is when the rod turned into a serpent. And when there's the serpent, you're not going to get Sheman. If you think masculine of the rod turning into a serpent, that's exactly what happened. When he was here, and whenever he performed, you know, the work to take place, the rod brought forth the Sheman. But when he left and that office went to Satan, then it turned into a serpent and there could not be the Sheman. What has to happen is the serpent has to turn back into a rod so that the Sheman can come forth.
Well,
the bride.
Before you finish this, and I'm sorry, I'm the one that wants you to finish this, but I have to ask. So what about Christianity in their latter reign, and the outpouring of the Spirit and the Azusa Street revivals and many things that have been documented, even with Reese Howells and the many miracles and things that took place in his life and his ministry? Was that Sheman?
No. I mean, they had outpourings of the Spirit, but not the giving of the Spirit that's going to produce the Son of God. That's the Sheman that has to come forth. And by the way, Sheman means oil. It's a Hebrew for oil.
Right.
And the two olive trees were called the two sons of fresh Sheman, the two sons of fresh oil. They're the former and the latter rains. Chris, what happens is during the period of Christianity, it's exactly what happened with the second son of Judah that was given to Tamar, the granddaughter of Melchizedek. What did he do? Did the Sheman come forth? Yes, the Sheman came forth from that man. But his seed was spilled on the ground. And that is exactly what has happened to the Holy Spirit for 2,000 years. The Holy Spirit is not entering into a woman because the body of Christ is masculine. It's not going to help them any at all. You could bury them in it, and it's not going to help them. The Sheman is only beneficial to the female. Otherwise, it goes to the ground and dies. And that's what's happened. The testimony of the Sheman is that it brings forth the birth of an offspring. Of course, for the first remnant, that Sheman brought forth the body of Christ.
Right, it did. That's right.
But the Sheman that has to come for bringing forth Yeshua, Emmanuel, let's say, cannot come until the serpent turns back into a rod. Have there been outpourings of the Spirit? Yes, there obviously have been, but they get worms in them real quick. There have been outpourings, but the semen falls to the ground, and it's worthless.
Okay. So back to this 40 and 3 and 3 and 40, what's so marvelous to me about this is that, it shows another flip. And it's consistent with Yahweh's patterns and his ways. And so what is he saying? I mean, you've said it, that the 40 and the 3 and the 3 and the 40 give us hope that he'll do something here in these next few days.
It is amazing how he is so consistent with these flips. Someone wrote me recently and said, I don't see them. And thinking, man, I mean, these flips are common in the scriptures. How he changes things. He reversed. Ephraim and Manasseh were flipped in order to make them clean. You went from Shiloh to Jerusalem, and he warned them, hey, you go to Shiloh and you look, and if you don't change, you're going to find I'm going to leave you. What will he do? He'll go back to Shiloh. He does these flips in order to make things clean, and he obviously performed a flip with these. Now, do I understand everything about it? No, I don't. I still have questions. What would it mean towards the end of the ministry period? Would there be some kind of a testimony of a 3 and 40? I don't know. I'm just trying to get on the other side of the wedding feast of Cana right now. And then we'll go from there. But we need to experience this testimony. And I marvel at the truth, the much needed truth that the bride has received at this time. It is very encouraging, very hopeful that Yahweh is indeed giving us the knowledge that we have to get to where we have to be so that he can pour out his spirit and perform this work. And again, this would be the fulfillment after a breach since 1994. Yahweh would begin what he promised back in 1994, and we'd see this bride begin to be developed with the power of the Spirit. 3.5 year ministry that take us from Passover, April 25 of 2009, to Trumpets of 2012. That'd be a 3.5 year ministry period. At Trumpets 2012, we would ascend alive as the bride. Christianity would stay here on this earth, of course, along with the nations. We'd be in heaven for 15 days, come back with Emmanuel, preparing the way for him, and tabernacle on this earth for 1,000 years, rule and reign with him for 1,000 years. And then it looks like at the end of that, that's where you see, that's interesting. That's where you really see the 40, because that 40, of course, as written in one of the writings, can't remember the name of it right now, that 40 is probably the millennial, it's the millennial calendar. That 40 testifies to the millennial reign. At the end of that millennial reign, Yeshua and undoubtedly the bride would depart from this earth, and the kingdom would be left in the hands of the body of Christ. It would be their Elijah period. They would rule for 2,000 years before they ascended alive at the end of that 2,000-year period. No wrath, no wars, no, none of all this Christian stuff. You know, it's all been going on for 2,000 years. It's not going to be anything like what Christians have thought it's going to be. It is at the kingdom level, and we see Yeshua establish his kingdom on this earth. That's what it's all about.
Well, you've talked about how all the wonderful things that have been shown to the bride at this point, and that in millions of years, without Yahweh's Spirit revealing these things, there's just no way anybody would see them. I mean, look, for 2,000 years now, that theologians have not been able to see these things and the things that we're seeing today. So it's a very wonderful thing.
They can't get past Daniel 9.
No.
They've got the covenant with the many, which is the ministry period of Yeshua and the ministry period of Elijah. They've translated that to be some kind of antichrist beast. They are light years away from the truth with that. And how can they ever come to real truth with their dung, with their darkness, with their error?
Now, isn't there a group of Christians now looking for a delayed Passover at some point during May?
Yes, they are. It's a group that I used to be associated with. I used to go to the home of this gentleman. And yes, they're looking for a delayed Passover. I think it's going to be this next week. It may be May 8th or something.
But that lent hope to you because it really confirmed that Christianity does indeed look for a delayed Passover, as testified in Mark and Yeshua cleansing the temple on the next day.
Yes, they're a real small group within Christianity. They think that they're the overcomers, the sons of God, but no, they're the body of Christ, and as long as they stay in that, you know, if they want to have that as their Passover, great, they can have it. We need the real thing, and that's what we hope we achieved on April 25. So with hope, we look to the days before us. There'll be another writing coming out explaining some of these things a little further, and we will see what Yahweh does.
Well, I sure enjoyed our time together at Passover. I enjoyed the folks that traveled. You know, one brother traveled 2 days by car. A couple of us drove 13, 14 hours. Some others drove a little bit less, a little bit more. And so it was a sacrifice for many to get there. But we all left edified. We were glad that we had came. And so it was very good time to spend with you. Got some face-to-face time with you, some good fellowship. And I'm looking forward to the writing on the things that we talked about. There were some deep discussions about some relevant things that are going on in our world today, and it was very intense. And I think the listener will benefit from reading about it.
Yes, we will continue to learn. We make our commitments, and Yahweh has continued to bless. And with hope, as we approach these days before us leading up to June 6th and after that up to August 7th, which is my birthday. He began the bride work on my birthday. And my wife's birthday was October 16th, which is when we had trumpets. Our wedding anniversary is June 6th, which is what we would be looking for after the 43 days. And then my one daughter was 2 days before Tabernacles Pentecost born, and then the other one is 2 days before June 6th was born. And so I think he's got a few of the Naylor things going in this. I just hope they all come to fruition.
Well, I hope so too, and I'll continue to walk this out with you and continue to support and do these shows and do whatever I need to do to continue to be part of this, as I know others have joined with us.
Yes. Indeed, and I hope that this program has been beneficial to people. It's just a good casual conversation about all of this, and welcome comments and suggestions from the listeners, and we're always glad to serve them. Is that, and especially you, Mr. Meyer, in representing them so well.
Well, I'm happy to, and I'm glad to, and as you know, anytime you've asked me to do these shows, I drop for the most part what I'm doing, and I've committed to do these, and I enjoy them, and I grow thereby. These programs, they're very beneficial to me, so I'm very grateful and glad to be part of it.
One of the things came to my mind the other day, just a while ago, I mean, and I thought, and I lost it. Now you just reminded me of it. 144,000, the second group, I think that's in Revelation 14. Concerning them, it says that they followed the Lamb. That was one of their qualities. They followed the Lamb. Chris, I do believe that what we have been going through, actually, for me, since June of 1994, but I do believe that, particularly evidenced in these last several months, we have sought to simply follow the Lamb. And I do trust that that will continue to be the quality of the bride as we seek to do His will and prepare the way for Emmanuel so that the stones don't cry out. That is our hope.
Amen. And the thing that you have resolved and committed to just within the last few days is that you will continue to follow the Lamb. You will continue to be faithful and follow the Lamb wherever He goes. And that means the abandonment of a career in truck driving school, that you're in this for the long haul, and that's it. This is where you will be. This is where you will stay.
It sounds like I'm going to be in truck driving anyway. What's going to do is long haul.
That's right. That's right. Well, God bless you, brother. Thank you. I enjoyed our face-to-face visit we had. Those few days were very, very blessed for us, for me especially, to spend some time with you. And I look forward to many more visits with you.
And likewise to you, and I do look forward to other visits with you. And I look forward to meeting people as we hopefully will be getting together in the future as we see this unfold. But until then, we will continue to learn, won't we, Mr. Meyer?
We will, sir. And you take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Blessings, bro.
Blessings. Bye.
Bye.